For September 6, 2013, we talk about who knows what the fuck. Welcome to the 33rd level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. We just finished a rousing discussion of astrophysics and things like that, and now we're ready to talk about video games. What do we conclude in that conversation? Nothing, but it was better than the previous conversation about race. So just a little peek behind the curtain here in this very special making of. Holy
shit. So new words from Ben.
What is this?
That's supposed to be a picture.
Yeah, no, I think that you... You just posted, like...
internet. You posted all of the internet.
It appears to be if somebody tried to encode a JPEG in hex.
As we just set a world record for derailment.
I think so.
It works. It works.
Also, okay. there's some O's and some R's, so it can't be hex.
Yeah. David...
Stop using your smarts.
You're the worst. No, you're not the worst.
You, off the island.
You can't see it, but I'm just pointing very sternly in the opposite direction and not saying anything.
The opposite direction of the internet.
Wherever you are. So, all those things aside, we're here to talk about some video games. At least I am. I don't know about you guys. So why don't we get to it? It's time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world vis-a-vis video games. Does anybody have one they want to volunteer? Mine are both minor and also two of them, so I don't want to go first.
Nothing really rose to the surface for me.
I've just been Googling Neil deGrasse Tyson images.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been reading the post your favorite meme thread in Something Awful, and I'm getting like acquainted with a side of the internet that I've never, you know, that have broken off from, you know, for a while. And apparently Neil deGrasse Tyson memes are a thing. Apparently there's a line drawing of him that is very popular in these things called rage comics, which are universally ugly. And it's him making like a defensive gesture and saying, "Look out, guys, we have a badass over here." And it's
that one's pretty funny.
I've seen rage comics. I was never able to attach a name to them. I like that image you just posted.
I think my favorite meme is probably like a sir.
Oh, is that like a? It's is it the what is it the Renaissance painter guy? Instead of like a boss.
That one's good too. It's.
Like a boss, but with a top hat and a monocle.
Let me.
So while you're digging up a meme, do you want me to just do my story?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we might as well just start from the beginning. This has been all over the place.
Yeah. No. This ship has left the station, the dock. The airport. This boat has left the airport. nothing lands this boat. Not even me. No. Okay. So I've got two. The first one, I posted about this on the Facebook group, but I feel like it bears mentioning on the show. There are some people putting together something that is called Asylum Jam. You can find details about it at asylumjam.tumblr.com. I really think this is a cool idea. So their goal is to, over the course of 48 hours towards the beginning of October, have people make scary games that don't rely on negative stereotypes about mental health issues. So,
I remember you posting that.
Yeah. So, I like a bunch of games that rely on this, but it's something that's just a little bit gross about the genre in that it, you know, portrays mental hospitals and nurses. And, you know, you just look at Silent Hill, right? Straight jackets and, you know, in a negative light. Oftentimes, you know, psychopaths, quote unquote, are the people who are coming after you. And it's kind of like a stigmatizing force. Not going to stop me from playing survival horror games. I'm not that PC, but I think that, you know, just people coming out and saying, "Hey, maybe we can make a game that doesn't rely on these things." That's pretty cool. And it should be lauded. So their site has some examples of like games that in general avoid those kind of things, or you know, those stereotypes. So like Slender, the, you know, the Eight Pages, Among the Sleep, just in any number of them, right? So that's pretty cool, and I would recommend people take a look at that.
I think that's a really cool idea. I don't know. I was, you know, it was one of those things I liked it because it kind of got me thinking about, you know, some of the games I've played and, you know, some of the depictions and stuff. Mm-hmm. Although I'll say, for me, a lot of the times, like, when I'm playing, especially the ones that have, like, the generic, like, horrible asylum, like, Call of Cthulhu, my, you know, kind of my feeling I get from that is more, oh my god, I'm glad we don't treat mentally ill people like this anymore.
Yeah, yeah. the anachronistic ones.
Like, wow, that's horrifying.
It's nuanced. I don't think that the people who make those games are intentionally doing it. I just, you know.
Right. Well, and actually, and one of the things I like about this is, you know, I didn't read this Asylum Jam. I don't think it's meant to be, you know, that there's anything wrong with games that do that.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I like about it is that it's you know presenting another side, but it's not saying that, you know, the people that do differently are, you know, horrible or whatever.
Yeah,
maybe the way to say it is like, as long as it's intentional, or you know, there's thought behind the reason you have a spooky asylum or a spooky doctor or whatever it is, mental health issues. You know, as long as there's intention there, it's okay. When that just becomes the fallback and you're mindlessly, you know, assuming that these things are bad or spooky, that's when you start to get into deep waters.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna read from their website just a little bit. So let's play the Cole Reads from the internet music. You know, the WHO says that like 1 in 4 people are gonna be affected by mental disorders, in their entire life, which,
is that,
you know,
directly or indirectly?
Directly. So,
wow.
Yeah, 1 in 4 people, which, you know, it's a pretty big portion of the population. They say horror is usually derived from the unknown and what we do not understand, and mental illness is one of those subjects where the general public lacks knowledge and insight. Many horror games use the negative portrayal of those who suffer from mental illness as extremely violent or sadistic, usually as the villain or antagonist, as an easy crutch to rest their story, characters, and motivations on. So, like, one of the reasons they're doing this is because there's a game coming out called Outlast, which I was excited about, you know, during
E3.
I'm actually
really excited about
that.
Yeah,
I'm excited about it, too. You know, it's, you know, it looks scary. nothing will stop me from playing a survival horror game when it comes out. Oh, man, A Machine for Pigs next week, dudes. and by next week, I mean the sequel to this week. And by that, I mean this week, A Machine for Pigs. I'm so sorry for stealing that joke. I lifted that joke wholesale from Video Games Hot Talk, but I'm joining the crusade. So,
excellent.
So, yep, it's food for thought. Be mindful of those things. Can I do my other one just while you guys are scrambling through joystick or whatever you do?
Oh, I remember what mine was.
Yeah, that was actually mine. So you already stole it from me, you horrible person.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's a good excuse. Yeah,
you're on a roll. Story. Make it, take it, so you get to do another.
Oh, how about you, Dennis? Say a thing.
No, I was. They just said you're on a roll. Make it, take it.
Make it, take it. Oh, okay, cool. The other thing, and this is only tangentially related to video games, but it is a video game. So my favorite band, everybody can feel free to tune out now because I'm going to talk about a band, Ockerville River.
Never heard of them before.
probably not. They're not that. I mean, they're popular, but not that popular. They released their new album today. It's the Silver Gymnasium. It's kind of like a concept album about the lead singer's hometown, circa 1986 through 1989. And as a companion piece to this, on their website, that's OckervilleRiver.com or the SilverGymnasium.com. Either of those will take you there. They put out a flash-based point-and-click adventure game has 8-bit graphics. It's like circa that era, because I didn't know this until I played the game, but the lead singer grew up playing Maniac Mansion and King's Quest and all those things. Like, awesome. So you're kind of going through this stuff, this fiction that kind of complements the album while listening to 8-bit versions of songs from the album. So, you know, this is something that maybe like 4 people are going to care about. But I tweeted about it, and like a bunch of people like asked me like, hey, here, you know, can you give me some recommendations? And they seem to like it. So I want to say like, go check that out. If it gets you into it, sweet. If not, hey, I don't like when people recommend bands either. But this is, you know, one of those cool instances where there's this cross media promotion thing that really works and is thematically appropriate.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Check it out.
So I got a thing, and I got a divergent comment.
Okay.
Divergent comment is, you said 25% of the people would be affected with a mental disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mental disorder.
Yeah.
That means, on average, that means one of us will be affected with a mental disorder.
I've been very open about my issues, Ben.
Yeah.
One of us actually is affected by mental disorder.
Yeah, so...
All right. I was going to say, like, let's make predictions, but I guess we don't even need to do that. Thanks for taking the hit, Cole.
That's fine. Yeah, no, that's... Don't worry, guys. I got this one.
Yeah. All right. And then my weekly GTA 5 update.
Yeah.
It's just that they confirmed a midnight release. So that's just a small little ditty. But so you can get it on Monday, 2 weeks minus a day from now. Or when you hear this, 2 weeks minus 4 days from now.
Huge game receives midnight release. News at 11. Oh, wait. Yeah. At 11:59 or 12:01, whenever they release it.
Yeah, so not earth-shattering news, but
yeah,
whatever.
So will you have it beaten by the time we do the podcast?
Dude, I secretly dreamt like, how cool would it be to try and 100% this game first and get the GTA key to the city like they sent out for GTA 4. But I don't think I got the constitution in me.
Yeah, that's got to require chops. There are people who are like... analyzing gameplay footage in order to see like, okay, there's a collectible. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for a, for a different class of, well, humans generous, let's say mutant. Yeah.
Ben, you don't seem like the poop sock type to me.
Poop sock. What is poop sock?
Google
I almost
it.
Want to tell you to Google it. But, yeah.
That doesn't seem like a good idea, man.
So to save people from needing to Google poop sock and have that on their NSA permanent record forever, the notion of poop socking sprung up around MMOs. The idea being that you are so engrossed in the game and you cannot separate yourself from your computer long enough to go take a dump that you instead just poop right into your sock. And then I guess... fling it at the wall and watch it slide down. I'm not exactly sure what you do with the sock or how that is preferable to like
at that point it doesn't matter, you've already
sock ... profit.
No, like, okay, so here's what I understand. Why a sock? Most people have a garbage can or a waste paper basket in their rooms.
Yeah, but people don't think ahead. They start the game
way too much.
Well, it's just logistics. Like, I think about, you know, taking my sock off. It's a trivial amount of effort, but it's still time. And you know, just if you have any notion of planning, you can just pull it over, you know, have it next to you. That and pooping into a garbage can while you're playing a game wouldn't require your hands, whereas pooping directly into a sock would require you to remove your hands from your control implements of choice and hold the sock tight up against your exit
happy
aperture.
Hole.
Your happy hole. Oh, that's gross, Ben.
I don't know, your sad hole. Then.
Yeah, your sad hole. Your shame vortex. You would be holding your sock.
Your
crapature. Ignore my loud typing.
So everyone listening who is tuned out at this point, no one has made it to this point in the episode.
I swear we get to video games at some point.
After you
get past the crapature.
Can I bring us? Good God! Can I say something about Grand Theft Auto 5 that I thought was kind of cool?
Sure.
So Laszlo, one of the producers of the game, who I will always identify as being the guy who was like one of the first tech podcasts, and also the DJ from Grand Theft Auto 3, like one of them anyway, on the talk station. Really? Yeah. Like that guy came out and like revealed that for some of the passersby, they actually got actual gang members to provide the incidental passerby. Dialogue.
Kind of interesting.
For authenticity, which I think that's cool. Whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I hope they can, release which lines were, or maybe it'll be obvious or whatever, but that'd kind of be interesting to see.
Yeah.
So for me, the scary thing about Grand Theft Auto 4 is with Grand Theft Auto 3, when you played it, and if you 100%ed it, like some people have, you kind of see everything the game has to offer, right? So you hear all the different sound bites, and you kind of explore all the maps, so you get a good lay of the land or whatever. With Grand Theft Auto 4, it's it's scary that you never see the end of that game. So the conversations that people have on their phones or when they walk by, you don't get a repetitive nature with that,
Surely it has to end.
Yeah, sure.
There has to be a finite. Is there a finite amount of dialogue, or are they doing some kind of procedural? No.
They actually have their sentences locked in a basement.
Yeah. No, they're tapping into people's actual phones.
That's what the NSA does. I get it.
How do you feel about Ty? I don't know. This is weird. Usually it's some kind of the test results were positive. What? I don't need to hear that. Come on. Yeah, no, I found out about that reading the gamers.txt thread and something awful, and people were coming out and saying, this is too far. I don't know. People just offended at it. It's what? Who has yet to go?
Me.
You.
Me. Oh, me. All right. So, game coming out called Rime. Have you guys heard of this? R-I-M-E?
No.
Okay. Did you like Eco?
Yes.
Did you like Shadow of the Colossus?
Yes.
Nonsense. No one's there like those games.
So the trailer for this game looks like Eco gets mashed into Shadow of the Colossus. Plus Journey style graphics.
Yeah, you're breaking Ben's heart because you're basically describing The Last Guardian.
Hey. Come on.
What? No, I'm just saying what it is. That's how Eco has been described. Shadow of the Colossus meets Eco.
Yeah. Oh, The Last Guardian has been
Instead
described.
Of a girl, you're carrying a Colossus around by your hand.
Yeah.
No, it looks beautiful. It seems to be kind of a harkening back to the simpler platformer days. Mm-hmm. I don't think we know much about the story or what all's going on, but it is down to fighting shadow monsters with a stick and giant behemoths in the distance, just a direct inspiration from or allusion to or
fast follow.
Homage. Yeah, whatever it is to I don't think it can be a fast follow. However many years after Shadow of the Colossus came out,
that's just one of my favorite euphemisms for clone.
but it looks cool and if it's very clear where it takes its inspiration from. So a thing to watch.
Yeah, it's being.
Apparently, it's also got climbing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, climbing as well, and even
that wasn't featured in either of those other games that you're talking about.
watch the trailer. First off, the opening shot on the beach is straight out of Eco, and I'll send him where that. And then where he's crossing the bridge, that whole scene is straight out of Shadow of the Colossus. It's not even a subtle reference. But I mean, it's a beautiful game. Like I said, Journey style graphics, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
They have some that is some sexy shaders happening on there.
It looks kind of like Wind Waker.
Yeah, no, it's got. I'm trying to decide if it has a pastel or watercolor look. I haven't seen it in motion, but it's both vibrant and a little bit washed out.
Yeah, it's too defined for watercolor.
No,
yeah, I mean, it almost looks like it's got a little bit of this cell shading thing going on, but
yeah, it looks it looks painted over. Good God, that's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I'm happy to know about this thing. Thank you, Dennis.
Yeah. Like I said, a thing to watch.
Huh. Cool. And David, you're copping out and saying that I took yours. So do we want to do the grind?
Yep.
Okay.
All about the cop-out.
The grind.
It's time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past so-and-so amount of time. David, I want to ask you to go, because it's been a minute.
Sure. I actually have two fairly big ones. I Max Payne 2.
Okay.
Which I would highly recommend. It basically takes the gameplay from Max Payne and makes it much, much better. just in general, they make your character is a lot more durable, you know, a lot more difficult to kill. And bullet time's a whole lot more effective. And
so you're saying that this character could in fact take more pain than what Max Payne could take in the original Max Payne.
How much
Max Payner?
How much pain? Max Payne.
I just got that, you guys.
Yeah, no, Max, cousin to Max Power, which is Homer's pseudonym that he picked up from a hair dryer. Yeah, no, I like referencing B tier Simpsons episodes. It kind of, you know, it's a power play.
Sure.
Just for the hardcores out there.
Yeah, just for even more references, in the game, the healing items are called painkillers.
Huh, that seems counterintuitive.
Wait a
minute. I mean,
it's spelled different, don't worry.
All right.
We point out all the obvious double entendres in Max Payne.
I like the way you said that. Close one. Like,
good thing they got the spelling right on that one.
Yeah, just the most sarcastic relief, like, whoo. Dude, fix your attitude.
Well, I don't know. I mean, when over the course of, I mean, the game takes like one night, and I've apparently over the course of that like downed like 30 bottles of prescription pain pills. So, I mean, really, in the long run, I think the name might be accurate.
Touche.
The storylines, the gameplay is much better. It's much easier, which I suppose some people would say is maybe unfortunate.
Those people are wrong.
Yeah. But there's people wrong. Yeah, like, overall, it just ends up being more fun. The games, to a large degree, or large parts of them, are kind of these revenge, you know, rampage narratives, and those just don't work that well if your character can't just take people out.
Right.
The other thing is the storyline's actually much, much better. I don't know. I mean, giving any details would kind of give it away, I guess. But, you know,
there's like a female interest in it, right?
Yeah. It's a female interest. And basically, the basic plot is she's a criminal, you're a cop. But you're both sort of going after the same person. So it's kind of you trying to protect her from the police while at the same time, like, work with her to, take out the real bad guys kind of thing. But the other cool thing is it's a lot of fun seeing all the features that would eventually become part of Alan Wake.
including most of the gangsters are mole men, so light is the weapon. And also, you ally with Aerosmith, so music becomes the weapon.
Nice reference, dude.
Yeah.
Well, one of the big ones, one of the most obvious ones, other than just the random voiceovers, is do you remember like Dark Falls or whatever from
Oh yeah, that's like a Remedy. That's a Remedy mainstay, the fake show within a show.
Yeah. So that's huge in this one. Basically, they have a show called like Address Unknown that is sort of, I guess it's supposed to be a parody of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's
which in turn had its own parody of soap operas in it.
Oh,
so I think it's just interior parodies all the way down.
So was Charlie Kaufman a writer of the script, or?
But it's kind of cool because, you know, it's set up where, you know, throughout the levels, the episodes that'll, you know, just be appearing on the TVs and the levels mimic what's going on in the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were midpoint. I'm sorry. I was going
to... No, and just... and so it's... It does a really good job of, in particular, using those to kind of set up the arc of the story and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of foreshadow things.
Yeah. So are you just on a grand tour of the Max Payne series now?
I think so. What is it? One of the Steam competitors had on sale, maybe they still do, all three.
Oh, okay.
Say again?
And David was making giant air quotes for Steam competitors.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to play the third one, but a lot of people recommended playing the first two before that.
Hmm.
The one thing I have seen so far that in the third one, I've just started that I don't like is... I guess this is sort of a spoiler, but very beginning of Max Payne, his family gets taken out, and that's kind of like, you know, the genesis for him being like a brooding hero for all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And at the end of two, you know, he kind of, you know, finds solace and, you know, sort of, you know, that sort of thing. And then they pretty much just ignore that for three, and he's back to just being, like, mopey.
Well, he's like a straight-up degenerate alcoholic in three, right?
Yeah. Like, he's big-time alcoholic. That's actually one thing that kind of disappointed me so far in three, particularly at the beginning, is, like, the first several gunfights, you're straight up drunk.
Nice.
they don't do anything with like the camera or like, you know, messing with your controls, say like the way they do in like Saints Row the Third or like the driving in GTA. So I felt like that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Especially because it's the same company between GTA and
because I mean, like, it's very, very, like, blatantly, like, your character is a raging alcoholic at that point.
Hmm.
Huh. So, the other thing I've actually been playing is I've finally gone around to playing Portal 2.
What?
Good on you for playing it now. Bad on you for not playing it until now.
Yeah. No. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I just think less of you now.
I'm currently at like chapter 8 out of 10.
So you're well into the third act then.
Yeah. I'm past retro
aperture, yeah.
Whatever, and just starting to really get into the new one.
Keep in mind I haven't played it.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay, sorry.
He's like, well, then I have nothing else to say.
I've really, really enjoyed it. I feel like on top of having a great story. I feel like the there's kind of a lot of meta things I really like in terms of kind of how the game is set up. I feel like not only are the puzzles very good, but they do a very good job of, you know, they'll introduce a puzzle element, play with it a little bit, and then leave it behind before it becomes annoying.
Yeah.
In particular, you know, one of the things I felt they overused in the first game that they don't overuse in this game is the turrets.
Right.
Okay.
You know, they're there, they're a thing, but like I felt like in the first game it was a lot of things where it's like, hey, let's do this puzzle, but there's also turrets shooting at you. Whereas in this case, the turrets are only there when they're actually a part of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say two things that did kind of frustrate me. It does kind of get annoying that any time you want to do anything, there's a puzzle.
What do you mean?
Like,
puzzles are integrated into everything.
Well, I guess more it's just like...
Flip on a light switch. Puzzle to do it.
right, exactly. Like, you can't open doors.
Yeah. You know,
And stuff. And so it's just annoying that it's like, any time it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go into this, you know, like, new chamber, whatever, there's going to be, like, just some little mini puzzle to how you actually portal your way into the chamber.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think
let's just say the pause menu is a bitch.
Yeah.
And I think part of it's probably just me that I'm playing it for the story, not for the puzzles. Hmm. So maybe someone that actually likes puzzle games would, you know, kind of appreciate that more. I also, yeah. I didn't like the liquid puzzles.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Well, what I didn't like about them was the fact that they tended to be slow.
Like, it took a long time to figure them out, or?
Well, more in terms of, like, you know, all the other puzzles, you know, you pretty much just, you set up the, this, you know, once you found the solution, you set it up, you went, you're done. Whereas I felt like I spent a lot of time with these, like, you know, setting up to get to spray where I wanted it to spray, or, you know, spray here so that then I can set up to, you know, spray somewhere. I don't know. I felt like it was more just the mechanics of, you know, having to wait for the actual spraying to happen.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I felt like the parts where you had to set up kind of the sequences, those were really cool.
Yeah.
So so far I'm really really enjoying it. I'm still wanna know why you can't open freaking doors.
You have to have them open for you. You have to make them open.
Apparently,
it's a subtle but distinct difference. Yeah.
That is why I am royal and you are servile.
Wait, so Dennis, why haven't you played this game yet?
I think I started to, and then I couldn't steal it from you easily enough, so I haven't finished it.
You couldn't ply him with alcohol?
He just kept on drinking. He never got drunk. I don't understand. I don't think he's human, guys.
He just kept pouring it into his front pocket.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, no, Portal 2. I've been meaning to go back and replay that. If I have a, you know, general excuse, busyness, too many games to play, to replay a game, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it's so good.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm kind of... the one thing I'm kind of wondering is, you know, apparently there's been some whatever that in episode 3/ Half-Life 3, they were going to kind of merge the portal arc or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. They
and,
Good.
And I kind of wondered how they're going to, you know, kind of rectify the, you know, serious Half-Life universe with the jokey Portal universe.
Well, they pretty much obliterated that possibility by having Portal 2 take place 10,000 years in the future. That, and also, like, you see, like, textual and also just kind of like are just artifacts that show that the whatever it is, the Borealis that you see at the end of episode 2, just like never became a thing. Like you just like you see parts of the Borealis spread throughout the place.
You see like a buoy for the ship, and yeah, that it's already left.
I don't know. I just said for some reason I remember concluding that like, oh, they did the time skip to show that nothing came of that. But
I didn't think the time skip was that dramatic. I thought it was only like 100 years.
It was pretty big from what I remember. But maybe not 10,000, but Half-Life 3 confirmed, guys. This conversation, this is Valve's way of saying Half-Life 3 is gonna come out this year actually.
Maybe
holiday 2013.
Heard it here first.
my theory was the way they were going to rectify the Half-Life universe and the jokey Portal universe is Half-Life 3 ever being released was the joke.
Oh, okay. It's like an Andy Kaufman thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I trust
maybe
you.
It was like that ship had sailed. It's not going to come out.
We realize we can make more money by releasing Dota. Left 5 Dead.
Yeah, Left for Dota. Oh, man. Now I want to go play Portal 2. Damn you, David. My work here is done. I flee. Who wants to go next?
I don't really have anything, so okay. I'll say I did... Well, kind of. I did my fantasy football draft, which is kind of a video game that's just based on real life randomization.
Hmm. It's definitely a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I am, you know, I enjoy watching football, but I have a horrible head for player names and stats. And, you know, I follow the Bengals because I'm in Cincinnati. But other than that, I can't really go in depth on it. So fantasy football is a nice way to kind of keep in touch enough that I can have a couple talking points when football comes up, and it's also just a good way to stay in contact with some friends from college that I don't really see anymore. So, but yeah, that's the closest thing to a game that I've done this week. I did some traveling, so I was on the road. We were celebrating. I hit my 2-year anniversary of being
congratulations!
Married, so.
Yeah,
thank you. That was exciting, but that meant that I didn't really get to play many video games.
Okay. I'll just mark this as a demerit, and you can just try harder next time. No, that's cool.
I was playing. I played some mobile games, but they don't really. I mean, nothing really there to.
Can I hear a title?
Jewel Mania. Oh, don't hate me.
I don't even know what
It's a match 3 game.
Yeah. I think I would have been less disappointed if you said Candy Crush. So, guys, mind if I go?
Please.
Okay. So my big one, I finished Saints Row 4. That is really good. I won't spoil anything, but Ben, you and I have to share something right here. All I'm going to say is you don't call him. He just goes where he's needed most. That mission. That mission, man. Yeah, but it stays pretty good. They recognize that they stretch it out towards the end, so much so that one of the quest givers says, hey, we're stretching out gameplay here. Come and do this bullshit. So acknowledging it doesn't make it better, but like it's very much entrenched in like people who didn't know anything about video games or humor couldn't have made this thing. And so nice. I have to respect them because they have gone so far into that realm of thought that it's just crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
Because I too beat the game over the weekend or last week or whatever. But yeah, technically they did not add a lot to the game, I feel like. But its strong suit is in its writing of the missions.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you know, like the biggest thing is the superpowers. You know, which that changes it enough. I get a little bit annoyed whenever they take the powers away. Like, I understand that they have to do it for balance purposes, but like, don't just frequently disempower me throughout the missions. You know, yeah. for some reason or another, especially because like, this is the game that I thought that I was playing, and then they change it up, like back to Saints Row, like instead of this bug nuts crazy thing.
That's nice. It makes you appreciate the powers, though.
Oh yeah, yeah, it definitely does. But it's like, yeah, and you develop this kind of loop that you do, you know, relying on different powers. Some of the different like genre bending stuff that they do is really cool. I'm thinking specifically of the mission to recruit blah. It's so hard because I can't like.
Yeah, there's
a character named Blah.
A character named Blah.
You gave it away, dude.
He's a stupid vampire. Oh man. But the loyalty missions are cool. I love the romance options. Which, you know, I'm a Kinsey man, I'm not gonna lie. Just so you just walk up
like taking one to the jaw.
Just every time I walk up to her, you just press square, and then the dialogue, this isn't spoilers, it's just funny. Dialogue option is your character walks up and says, "Hey Kinsey, wanna fuck?" And then she punches you in the face and says, "Let's go." And then fade to black. It's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's such a good parody of Mass Effect.
It really is. Yeah.
It's like, a Mass Effect parody? What? I don't know.
It's quite funny to see them make fun of other games. Yeah. It's definitely a kid in the back of the class sort of game.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And you know, we knew that they were going to be good at this from Saints Row the Third, but the use of licensed music. There's one moment towards the end in one of the climactic missions where they pump in a particular track.
Yeah, you
know what I'm talking about, right?
I know what you're talking about. You know, the music was fine, but for some reason I wasn't as into the 90s choices that they had, I guess.
I was never in a car enough to listen to the radio.
Okay. Yeah. Their dubstep channel was pretty solid.
The dubstep gun is pretty solid.
Yeah, I wasn't going to give it away, but yeah, that's awesome.
No, it's part of the marketing that there's a dubstep gun.
Yeah.
They had a special edition that had a replica of the dubstep gun.
So, yeah, if we can divulge this detail, there's a dubstep gun, and it fires along with the beat of the dubstep. So, like, a wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah just fires out wah-wah-wah-wah-wahs at people.
It shoots exploding wubs. And not only does it make nearby civilians dance, but also it makes cars pop on their hydraulics, and it makes
their lights flash.
Their lights flash. Also, the street lights blink on and off to the beat.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Like, I don't know. I take such umbrage to anybody who's like, there's a dildo in that game. But it's like so far beyond that. I don't know. I think that like that aspect of it gets overblown and meh. but no, it's just like I'm trying to like evangelize for it at work, and it's like I don't know. I don't, you know, it's like it's, you know, it's not my type. It's everybody's type of humor. Like it's, I don't know. It's just really, really good. I'm happy that I got it. On the balance, I don't know if I like it better than 3 or not. But just for just on its merits, you have to appreciate devotion to devotion to a joke, which they have in spades.
Yeah, I would say if you have not played the third one, this would be a perfect entry point. But yeah, if you, I mean, there's I don't think there's enough added to this game in comparison to the third one to warrant it being a separate title.
Yeah.
I feel like it totally makes sense that they originally started this out as a add-on, because it definitely feels like that more so.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, I recommend it. But I don't know, like maybe play three first. You don't have to go back to one or two. Although there are a bunch of callbacks and references and like crucial plot elements that are that involve the first and second ones. But I don't
yeah, it seems more so in this game than in the third one that they reference previous games.
Yeah, yeah, which just kind of like reads to me as them just thanking people if they stuck around.
Okay.
In addition to that, I beat Plants vs. Zombies. That is an old ass game, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. It's really good. There's not a whole lot to say.
Who won, the plants or the zombies?
I believe the plants in my game, but you know, I don't know if I had my war resources up high enough to get the best ending.
Yeah. Your plant defense rating.
Yeah.
Mother Nature preparedness rating.
I started playing Plants vs. Zombies 2. There's a little bit of, you know, there's controversy around it because it is like a free-to-play kind of thing. I'm only in the first world, and I've not gotten to a point where they're starting to charge for stuff. Some of the, like, if you are going to buy things, it's really, really, like, pricey, actually. It's like $5 for a new plant, like, to unlock it. And I guess you're going to be able to, like... You know, like,
so it's more expensive than an actual plant.
Yeah. Kind of. But like you can unlock them over the course of play, which is fine. You know, you are on like a world map with branching paths, and you can collect keys to unlock doors that can get you into, you know, like to be able to recruit these new plants. Recruit, R-O-O-T. That's not an actual thing. That's just from that one's free, PopCap. But I get the sense that like doors require like four or five keys. I don't know if you encounter that many keys over natural play. So I'm not quite certain if you, need to buy things in order to get that. So I'm not opposed to paying money in a game. However, in this instance, it feels like the progression is designed with that in mind, right?
They're trying to make money.
It's not even that, but like, okay, so if they charge $5 for it, they would make far less money than by saying like, you know, press a button to get some coins in the middle of a match or something like that. Like you have power-ups in a match that you can buy with coins that let you like pinch zombies' heads apart or like telekinesis throw them by doing various gestures. Hey, that's cool. They cost coins, but they cost a bunch of coins, like four or five rounds worth of coins. But there's a button in a match to press to buy coins so that you can use them. And they kind of break the balance of the game. It's like an instant win button to a certain extent. But that's still just like a little bit gross. So in a situation where I like the game, Plants vs. Zombies 2, still really cool. I'm interested in playing it, and I'm interested in, you know, getting as far as I can. Maybe I'm interested in spending, you know, a couple of bucks. But like I see the potential for them over the course of time asking for more money than I would have paid for the iPad version of Plants vs. Zombies 2. You know, which was like $7 or so, which again, not opposed to spending money on a game, not opposed to a good game being rewarded, but it's just a little gross to me. And I'm kind of falling on that side of it. That said, you know, it's still Plants vs. Zombies. It's still got that aesthetic. It's still, you know, charming as all hell. The graphics are a little bit goofy. And it may just be because I went from playing, you know, the first one to this one in such a short fashion. In fact, I just closed one app and opened up the other once I was done with the first one. But I think that there's no, like, iPad Retina native version of it. The graphics just look a little bit, like, stretched out and aliased and weird, or, like, anti-aliased in a strange way. A little bit blurry, a little bit indistinct, which I'm not that big of a fan of. Like, I would rather them optimize it for, you know, one of the most popular devices on the planet. But that's just me. Apparently I'm crazy. But yeah, Plants vs. Zombies 2.
I was gonna say sometime we should probably cover or have a debate on the podcast of the merits of free to or pay to play versus paying up front.
Yeah.
I think that'd actually be pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's get it out. I'm happy that you put free to play, or they just said pay to play instead of free to play, because that's you know, the more accurate way to put it. So I pretty much just said my piece. Like, contrast that with something like Super Stickman Golf, where I played enough of their game, and yes, they had cash options, but I just felt fine enough. And when I got to a point, I was just kind of like, huh, I'd like to give them money. So I bought like $20 worth of bucks or whatever, and then just did the hat lottery because I liked that game so much, right? Yeah. And it's like, okay, cool. I liked that. That was like a good way to do it. But then again, I look at something like Ridiculous Fishing, where there is none of that bullshit. And it was designed to be a $3 thing that you buy, and he gets the money out of it. And he goes so far as, like, it's a statement when a designer like that says, we're not going to do any DLC bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Which is, like, weird to me. But people who want to make money don't do that.
I think the mark of me is there an end point for how much you can buy? Like, you know, if a free-to-play game is designed so that you can just infinitely pour little 50-cent transactions into it and burn through them, and then 50 cents more and then burn through them, mm-hmm. I think that's not okay to me. I think if there is, hey, we're going to start you out with this kind of free base, and then there's a finite amount of stuff you can pay to upgrade to, then I'm okay. As long as that, you know, the amount of stuff you can upgrade to does not exceed the price of what you would get the game for at if you just wanted to buy it wholesale.
Yeah. There was a great game that came out late last year called Letterpress, which is like a word game for iOS. Looks really cool. It's very well designed, et cetera, et cetera. it was free, and you know, it's like a multiplayer kind of game. You were able to have one game going at a time, and for $1, you unlocked the ability to change the color scheme and also play as many games at once as you wanted. Which, cool, awesome. Like, if you like this game, give this guy, you know, a marginal amount of money, and you will be able to get more functionality of it. That's good, but yeah, but you're right. Like in total, what are you paying? Which, again, the calculus wouldn't work out. Like, if all things being equal, a developer, you know, if they were assured to get equal money both ways, they would probably want to charge you up front. Because then just kind of like you buy it, and no matter if you like it or not, they already have your money. So what?
Yeah.
Whereas with this, it's giving up the immediate reward for what they know on the whole, you know, like 5 or 1% of their players are going to make up for the other 95 to 99%.
Yeah. I think similar to Dennis, I think it just depends on how it's set up. I don't know. I think the big problem with pay to play is that no one has set down, particularly in MMOs, which is where it affects me the most. No one has set down and looked at how can we do this well.
I mean, they're arriving at it. Like they're arriving at least at the way that makes them the most money. Maybe not the way that makes the most. Maybe not the way that makes the most sense for the players or makes the best experience, but...
See, but I tend to think those... If you want to make the most money, they're the same thing. If you can make a lot of money by screwing over the players, but you can't make the most money by screwing over the players. Yeah. And I feel like... Yeah, I feel like, you know, I guess what I would kind of say is like what World of Warcraft did for MMOs is basically sat down and said, you know, how can we take the MMO, you know, the MMO setup and make it, you know, as good as possible? And I feel like no one's done that for free to play. It's just gone down. You know, sat down and looked at, you know, how can we make free to play that works but that doesn't suck.
Right.
I think a separate issue though is that we kind of is DLC. What I personally think DLC needs to die, and we need to get back to expansion packs.
I mean, they're functionally the same thing. Like the only people doing expansion packs now are Blizzard.
See, I think the difference was that expansion packs were, one, were generally actually had value, whereas a lot of DLC is crap.
Like okay, so are you referring to like mission packs? Because like I, on the whole, and again, this is like a okay. So this is self-selecting. I only buy DLC that I figure will be worthwhile. On the whole, the DLC that I've bought has always been worth it.
Well, I think the thing for me, the problem I have with a lot of DLC is, particularly story DLC, is because they're not the thing that makes expansions work is they're large enough and they're relatively limited enough that you can assume that your player base will generally buy them. So, if you look at, the Blizzard games, almost everyone who owns StarCraft also owns Brood War.
Well, yeah, because that's what made StarCraft StarCraft.
And I feel like the what that allows is that allows you to, one, have the storyline actually be canon and actually matter, and it allows you to, in a multiplayer context, not have to worry about splitting up your player base. And I feel like it just resolves a lot of the issues. That is why DLC is, as a whole, not a good thing right now.
Well, can you tell me like a piece of DLC that you felt burned by?
Which I'm sorry, actually, the air conditioner just kicked on. Can you say that again?
Can you? It's stalling for time. I see. No. I'm just curious about where this is coming from. Can you tell me a piece of DLC that you felt particularly burned by?
I would say some of the worst. A lot of the DLCs for example, the Assassin's Creed games would add missions, but since almost no one bought them and the story was basically over, none of the missions actually had any real story content. Whereas, say like Brotherhood was effectively an expansion pack and therefore was able to have story content. I would say the map packs for Call of Duty, one were so small as to basically be ripoffs, and two, only a very small percentage of the community actually bought them, so they just, it was almost a thing where there was no reason to buy the map packs because there weren't enough people to play them even if you had them.
I don't know. I think about Point Lookout. Or I think about Lair of the Shadow Broker or something like that. It's just weird to look at all of DLC. It would just it's a little bit crazy because everything is DLC. Like, just you're paying money.
See, but I feel like some of the things though is the examples you're giving are the ones that are almost expansion packs.
Kind of, but it's, okay. So there's a line somewhere between Horse Armor and Mothership Zeta that.
I guess I'm saying the closer you get to expansion pack, I think the better it is.
I guess, but I don't know.
Mothership Zeta is the Fallout expansion, correct?
Yeah.
All right.
So it's the one with the aliens.
Mothership Zeta.
Yes.
Guess where it takes place.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Ben, you prompted the question, and I would like to hear your thought on it.
Oh, I don't have an opinion on it. I was just asking.
Some men just want to watch the world burn. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I was going to say is I think it's harder to achieve artistic goals and downloadable content. Or I think it's harder to achieve long-term story arcs or dramatic changes in the storyline with downloadable content because of the scope of it. Right.
But that's not always the intention or even the best use of it. Right. Like I don't like, so again, looking at those examples that I gave, the Fallout DLCs, Mass Effect 2 DLC, that, kind of leverages and says you're going to pay a trivial amount of money, $5 to $10, for a couple of hours of really good, really well crafted, tight experience that, yes, is going to be over when it's done, but you were there for a ride. I like the idea that creators are going to be free to make those experiences and not have to charge full price for them. If that means that I'm going to be able to get a hold of them and play them. I think that something that games don't have is a short story. And, that's something I enjoy. And DLC is the closest thing that we're going to get to it. And I can't see making, saying like, oh, this needs to be canon, or, oh, this needs to have huge implications for the broader story, as being a universal good.
Okay, here, I guess this is where the rubber meets the road then. If they put the game first and the price is set like, okay, well, this is how much we need to set the price in order to pay for developing this storyline, I'm okay with that. If they put the price first and say, okay, how can we get the most amount of money out of our customers from this game, I'm not okay with that.
Oh, yeah, like universally. But I don't know how often the calculus fits in there. And look at EA, which sells cheat codes or sold cheat codes early on in the Xbox Live, thing where you pay $2 and you get, unlimited strokes and, life. They gave you all the strokes possible. It was a really bad deal. Your insurance rates go up. No, and Tiger Woods. That is cynical and gross and weird, but just kind of the notion of how are we going to provide long term, for lack of a better word, content or sustainability or interest in this. And, I think that in general, the model of let's put out a game that is a fully contained experience, and then over the course of the year after this comes out, leading up to a Game of the Year edition, let's make these little bespoke experiences, since we already have the engine, which means like you're getting new content in this thing that you ostensibly really like every couple of months, as opposed to waiting for a new 18 to 24 month development cycle. So yeah, if it is a cynical ploy to get as much money as possible, as you're saying, or as I am putting words in your mouth to say, that is shitty. However, just casting the whole thing as a negative, I don't know.
So
I would say it's usually a negative.
Here, for example, the Red Dead Redemption downloadable content where it turned everything into zombies.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Undead Nightmare. Yeah,
that was awesome because it changed like every element of the game. Like horses turned into zombie horses, people turned into zombie people. Maybe it wasn't that.
Cactuses original. Turned into zombie cactuses.
Only zombie when they died guns. From not enough water.
Yeah.
I felt like that was a really good game, and it had like a pretty. Sizable story to go along with it. Like you actually had, a campaign mission to go along for several hours. Then here's an example of downloadable content. L.A. Noire released downloadable content where it was just like a single mission, like an isolated mission. I disagree, man. I guess you can play it. And it's like, okay, this is an okay mission.
You can play it. It's more L.A. Noir.
But there's like no contextual relevance to it at all. It's just it's like, okay, that's nice. You should have put that in the game. That would have been much better somewhere in the middle of the game.
Like not every case that Cole Phelps solves has to feed into the meta plot. Sometimes he just straight up solves a case and puts somebody in jail.
I got to side with Cole on this one. Like, once you turn off your game console, it stops being relevant to everything in the world. So, I think it's fine. You play it because it's fun, not because it has some connection to the overarching story.
Well, I feel like it raises more questions than before. Like, where did that mission fall into the greater scope of the game? Like,
well, they fit it into the continuity, specifically in L.A. Noire. Like, it's there. Like, this is an arson mission. So this was something that happened when he was at the arson desk.
But even then, like, at some point, it's okay for it to be a game. And it's okay for me to say, hey, I enjoyed playing this game. I would like to play more games like it. And here is an example of more game exactly like what I'm enjoying. Mm-hmm. So
enjoyed the game explicitly because of the story, and you know,
but you're getting
right.
You're getting more of a small story.
My overall problem with it, I guess, is just I think it creates incentive to do bad things.
What bad things? I mean, with withhold content with the express purpose of wanting to sell it later?
I think that's one example. I think withhold modding and map making tools because you want to be the sole pusher is a huge one.
But there are plenty of examples where it actually does something really good. And this is the other side of it. I think we've gone from free to play to this discussion. But look at something like Dark Souls, or I believe this might be the case with Dishonored as well, where DLC is a way to save content that otherwise would have been cut because of, you know, budgetary or time constraints. Which is, you know, specifically in Dark Souls with the Artorias of the Abyss stuff, they're like, you know, they're getting up there, and they say they're getting towards the, you know, the release date, and they're like, okay, we have this whole section of stuff that we just can't finish before this game needs to go out. And their option was either put it in half-assed, leave it out entirely, or release it as DLC. You know, like, it wasn't big enough for them to, you know, to, like, okay, we've got to delay the entire game. And that content was good enough that I'm happy that they put out that content the way that they did. Like, that, like, it can be a way to rescue, you know, parts of the game.
Can I be slightly harsh?
Yeah.
If that content was good enough that it should have been in the final game, I feel like they should have not worked on it as the last piece of content.
I think that just ends up being, I don't know that that's how it worked out. It was specifically them just, you know, saying, oh man, because it's like something from the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure how they worked on it or what order, but you're right. Like, you know, like if this was, you know, do or die, this makes or breaks the game, and God knows plenty of games are put out unfinished, you know, with their final acts, you know, in a complete mess. Look at, you know, anything Obsidian does, and maybe they would benefit from a delay. But in that case, it was just a matter of this thing is good, and you know, it needs to go, like, you know, the whole thing needs to go out. Do we hold the train for it, or do we, you know, having the option now to put it out after the fact, do we do it that way?
So let me ask a question. Mm-hmm. Would you make the same argument for movies? So, like, for example, like, say if Michel Gondry had an additional scene of Eternal Sunshine and the Spotless Mind, and he wanted to put out this additional scene, but for a cost. You know, for a nominal cost.
Wait, isn't that what DVDs are?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, the special edition stuff.
Okay, but if they charged for that, would you pay for that?
They do. It's called the special edition.
They do.
Edition.
It's this special edition version.
No, I see what you're saying.
Only, if they released only that scene.
I see what you're saying. I think the answer is it all just depends. I'm not afraid of sounding hypocritical if I say no, because I feel like they are inherently different experiences and products.
I guess here's my question. Give me an example of when you feel like you've been sold an incomplete game where the you know, a significant part of the content was gated behind DLC.
Yes. All of the Modern Warfare games.
Specifically, okay. Like, as regards multiplayer, or...
Yeah. Yeah. Did people actually play the single player in those games?
Yeah. I don't.
Sorry. Yes. As regards the multiplayer.
So that would be bad DLC, but I think that is in the minority.
I think the example, though, of Dark Souls kind of shows what I was saying, though. I would say that was effectively expansion pack.
Well, at that point,
standalone one-time thing where it wasn't, hey, we're going to be doing this every couple of months.
At this point, we're basically arguing semantics, and the thing that I said at the beginning, I feel holds true to a certain extent, which is DLC has become what expansion packs were. And taken as a whole, you have these things that add up to what that otherwise would have been. You know, an expansion pack is a holdover between between major releases. And that's the niche that these DLC packs serve in the meantime. And if you look at something like, okay, again, Brood Wars, your example of, Call of Duty feeling like there was a certain amount of content that was hidden behind this gate or whatever. I'm positive that that a bunch of the stuff that was in Brood Wars was actually part of the original design for StarCraft. And granted, a bunch of it was added later to make it, more of a competitive thing. That was an explicit goal of that expansion pack. But what that was a way for them to take that and put it out and, bide the time and extend the life of the product. The same thing goes for Call of Duty, where they're trying to extend the life of the product, saying we're going to dole out a certain number of maps above the plenty that we've offered in the actual thing, in the actual box copy of the game until the next game comes out, as a way to keep people coming back as opposed to blowing their wad all at the front.
And I would say I think the issues I have with Call of Duty in particular are, one, the fact that it's not just a release, it's, we're going to release like 5 map packs. 2, the fact that they had always previously, and it's always been the standard and things like this, to release a map editor, and they did not. Yeah. And 3rd, just that they were horrible values.
Well,
were like $15 for like 3 maps.
Yeah, and that enters into it, the whole pricing thing. But how many hours is the average person getting out of those maps? I mean, remember Team Fortress was released with 2-3 maps, something like that. Like Well, and it was released with Well and Two Fort, and that was about it.
Well, and I guess the other thing would be, and in Team Fortress, if I liked a map, I could play on it.
What do you mean you could play on it?
Taking away server selection, there were only a small subset of the Call of Duty maps I liked. Mm-hmm. So, but I might only get to play one of them once every 5 games. So even if, I end up liking the, one of the expansion, or whatever, one of the DLC, maps, I couldn't necessarily play on it.
Yeah, I think that gets into a bigger issue, which is that those games are not designed as PC games anymore. Those are designed as console games, and this is No Country for Old PC dudes.
Go home, David.
I'm not even saying that. Like there's something that's lost.
What I'm saying is, I would agree. What I'm basically saying is, I think the console approach to game business, I think, is bad for gaming. This isn't necessarily my, I don't think consoles as a system are necessarily evil. I think the business model is bad.
And what's crazy is, all of the console manufacturers are jumping on being more like PC. You look at Sony and Microsoft racing to jump on indie games players' laps, right? Or not players, but developers. You know, like they just announced that the Xbox One is its own dev kit, which is crazy. And I expect Sony to follow suit, kind of, and look at both, you know, like both systems being geared towards being free to play machines as well. With the PS, like Blacklight Retribution being available on the PS4 at launch and all those kind of things, like console manufacturers are staring down at that PC money and those different business models, and they want a piece of that action.
I guess what I'm saying, though, and not to be that I spent like most of today working on Linux, but the part that makes PC gaming worthwhile is the freedom. And that's what that's what's wrong with consoles.
I don't know, Ben. What do you think of free to play games? Because that was the question I asked you. No, that was the question you asked us. Damn it!
I said pay to play.
You said pay to play. However, we then got on expansion packs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, okay. So I guess end of the day, I just want the highest quality games.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like if developers have content that is of worth, they should put in their main game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
No, I mean like specifically as regards the I don't know. We are down the rabbit hole, folks.
Yeah. Free to play games where I don't know. I'd rather pay up front and have my game be advertising free and completely immersive.
Yep.
But that's just my personal preference.
Me too.
But I will say that's kind of a that's probably like a socioeconomic bias thing though too.
That you have the money to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not all people have access to games when they first come out. Yeah.
Yeah. True. So I've been playing another game.
Oh yeah, we talk about games, right?
Yeah, and I won't spend too much time on it because we've been going for a minute. But we may need to cut this episode short. God, no, don't worry, it's good stuff. And hey, let's all take a moment. I appreciate you guys. If I got combative there, that's just good. That's just us talking. That's just us talking. Okay. Cool, as long as that's under. So we cool. We all cool. No. So the other game I've been playing, Papers, Please.
Oh, yeah.
How is that?
Did you make enough off of Steam sales? Or Steam card sales?
did I say that last time that I was doing the Steam cards to get them?
You're saving them up.
Yeah.
Which I think you can now officially call yourself a professional gamer if you've made money off of selling Steam cards.
You wake me up with a text this morning that's like Yeah. No, so yeah. Oh, okay. So I didn't make enough to get it, but so here's the insidious economics of that whole thing, right? So I think that after a particularly lucrative spate of achievement getting, I ended up with about like $3 or $4 in Steam cards or whatever, you know, like worth of that. I was like, well, I've got to get Monkey Island 2 because I want to play it on PC. The iPad version isn't cutting it for me, so I was like, okay, I'm going to get that. It's like, well, that's going to cut through my Steam. That's going to cut through my money from the cards that I was going to put towards Papers, Please. And Papers, Please was on sale because of like the Steam Greenlight sale. I was like, fuck it. So I put that in the cart. I bought it at the same time as Monkey Island 2, which I need to play for WAF. So it defrayed part of the cost of that thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. It kind of brings back memories for me of
when you were a Border Patrol agent?
Yeah, no. Not even like Border Patrol. You're like you're at a checkpoint looking at passports and such.
Mm.
Like I think Border Patrol, I think of like a redneck sitting in a lawn chair with his dip bottle.
Which is what he calls his shotgun.
Yeah. But no. Like, okay, so you're playing this game and you are very much just looking at documentation and comparing things and looking at expiration dates and, you know, passport codes and checking to make sure that the city that they say they're from is the city that they're from. And does their appearance match their gender that's listed? And, you know, the rules change every single day. And I got, I like playing it, you know, I'm going through the course of playing it now. gives me flashbacks to working retail, and also gives me flashbacks to my order entry job when I worked for a school supply company. In that it's very much comparing documents in order to make sure that there are no discrepancies. So I'm sitting there and you get into a rhythm. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, here it is. And it's almost like a miniature Phoenix Wright kind of thing, where it's like, ha-ha, this digit is wrong. And like, oh, there must have been a printing error. Please let me through to see my sick son. Nope, decline.
Objection. Yeah,
like, I got you. I got you.
Wait. So basically what you're saying is you paid – not only did you pay money, you did all this, you know, Steam – card shenanigans to earn money in order to work a minimum wage job.
Less than minimum wage. My family's barely surviving, David. I just lost my mother-in-law to sickness. I can't afford heat. It's communist Russia. Well, actually, it's Artsotska or whatever it is. But it's, you know, I picture everybody talking like Roman. like Roman from The Great Outdoors. What is it? Cousin Roman from...
Nico, my passport.
Yes. Yeah. No, and it's got all these like moral quandaries. Like, it's a dark fucking game. Like this isn't really spoilers. There are like terrorist attacks on the border, and like that cuts off the day, and you don't earn money for, you know, like for when you're not passing people through. So it's just kind of like, oh, my son can't eat today. Fuck, because that stupid terrorist. And like you're searching people. Like they give you an option to run like scans and do searches and things, but you're only searching people from a particular country. And when you prompt a search, it says, ah, yes, random search. It's not random. It's because you're from this country. Huh. It's like it's the grossest thing. And it presents you with all these moral. Okay.
When I was say the game.
So when I was young, at my dad's house, he had an SNES game called Vegas Games. All right, and it was, you know, you had various casino games, et cetera, et cetera. And I would play that not to gamble, but because every once in a while, when you were at a table, somebody would come up and say, "Oh man, I lost my room key. Can you blah blah blah? Can you help me look for it?" And there was like a random chance that they would either give you money for saying yes or like pickpocket you. And it was all these different situations, except with this, it's like somebody coming up and passing by and saying, "All glory to Aristotzka," and then leaving you a note that says, "This guy is chasing after me because I'm a victim of human trafficking. He's going to kill me. Keep him out at all costs." And if you don't keep him out, you see in the newspaper where a dancer was killed. It is That's super nuts. Dark and bleak. Like this is like political cart life. Yeah. But it's good. You get into this rhythm. Like you lose yourself in the minutia of this. And, you know, I find myself playing a role. So like right now, like my first two games ended in me running out of money. Like I said, you know, but like Pop's not going to make it through the night. Right. You know,
the mere fact that you call it that.
So like my tack is like, so there are 20 different endings that you can get. The first ending is just you run out of money and you're shipped to a gulag and your family is detained.
Though you work for the government.
Yeah. Like, wow. There are penalties for delinquency. And if you let somebody through when they shouldn't have gone through, like their name didn't match or you didn't fingerprint them or you broke one of the various arbitrary rules that are put in place each day, then you're docked. And if you go into the negative, you lose, essentially. So that's one of the endings. So right now I'm just playing through as like lawful neutral, which is I don't care what your story is. If your paperwork doesn't match, I'm declining you. So that person who's like begging for their life, or, you know, like if my action could reunite a family, I'm not going to do it because that puts my family at risk. And it does this weird thing of putting you into the mindset of a cog in this horrible machine where everybody, including you, is being ground down to dust. And there is no room for any kind of sympathy or leniency because whatever's happening to them, something equally as bad is happening to you.
Hmm.
Right? And it's presented so effectively, and the loop is so tight on it. So, you know, you're there for a regular working shift, and I believe it takes place over the course of 8 days or whatever. There are certain events that always happen on particular days, and you're going through, and you're just trying to get faster and more efficient because throughput is what's there. And when somebody's, like, name doesn't match, you get exasperated because at all the time that you spend, like, running strip searches on them. Oh, did I mention, like you can see, like, boobies and wieners when you strip search them?
Oh, good.
Yeah. You can see, you can turn that off if you want, like, to see, like, if they have any contraband or whatever. It's like every moment that I am searching you because you fucked up means that, like, my kid probably won't eat tonight.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's super effective. I mean, I feel like a lot of podcasts have been talking about it, but I would like to throw my vote in for this being kind of like one of those awesome, effective, maybe even like persuasive indie games. Again, kind of like along the lines of like Cart Life.
Do you feel like the game tries to, tries to draw a conclusion, or does it just try to say, hey, here's what this experience is like?
You know what? I don't feel like it's heavy-handed at all. Like, yeah, maybe it's a little bit maudlin in that they're talking about, you know, these heavy things, but like, if you have, you know, like a passing knowledge of like Eastern Europe or whatever, like when they bring up like human trafficking or like people being coerced into sex work, you realize like, oh yeah, like that's an actual thing. So I feel like that they're just presenting life in a way that is created and shaped by this weird fucked up system. So.
I feel like that's where games are at their strongest is when they're not, and not that games can ever, not that games can never do this, but I feel like games are at their strongest where they don't necessarily try to present a conclusion or a worldview, but simply say, hey, here is an experience in the purest form that I can recreate it.
I mean, it's like, I don't know, just a comparison to another game I played recently. It's like Gone Home, where all of the emotion that you get is from doing a thing yourself and experiencing it yourself. Mm-hmm. So it does, like, you know, in Gone Home, it doesn't, you know, it's portraying a narrative, but I just by the act of doing this personal archaeology on, you know, on this environment, you are, you know, putting together this own thing in your head. Just with this, it makes you feel by doing, which is, you know, the minutia of like shuffling the papers around on the desk and like looking the people down and then, you know, listening to them and hearing their stories. By making you go through that, it's letting you know it's not leading you to the water. You're finding your way to the water yourself.
Yeah, empathy versus sympathy.
Yeah, like, you know, it's empathetic game design. Make them feel by doing, right?
Nice.
Yeah, it's really good. I would recommend it very highly.
I love that the list of games like that is growing ever longer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, what was that one that you mentioned about like coming out or whatever?
Limb.
Yeah, Limb. What is it? Dysphoria or something. Like, those are kind of on the fringe. And not just because they deal with LGBT issues or whatever, but like those are flash games. You know, those are small. These are big releases. Papers, Please got a huge amount of press. You know, Gone Home. I mean, God, we did a whole episode on it. you know, it's so obviously it must be huge. Like, so it's not that the list is getting bigger. It's that they're gaining higher prominence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that one thing that's interesting too, is like a lot of these games could have been made like in the '80s, you know, but they weren't, you know, like, so I think it's just cool to see so much more depth.
Yeah.
I also think, you know, part of it's probably just, you know, storylines, you know, it's not just technology that advances, it's also storytelling. Whereas I feel like, you know, now they're able to take these themes and still make good games.
Yeah. It's, I mean, just kind of deciding, okay, what story can we try and tell? And they're picking this weird, unusual story. Like, a game about, you know, Soviet bloc. Just a game about life in the Soviet bloc in the '80s would have been just, you know, I'm not sure, Command and Conquer or something, yeah. Right? Whereas this like puts you just like the act of casting you as this bureaucrat, you know, just like there's almost a certain amount of bravery behind that.
Absolutely, yeah. It's an exciting time to play video games.
Yeah. So that's my games.
Have we even gotten through everyone yet?
No, because Ben, you have not said your thing yet.
Well, I played Saints Row the Fourth, yeah, and beat that. And then I have to come clean with you guys. I've backslid.
Into what?
I picked up Civ Rev over the weekend and started playing that again.
Okay.
So that's a thing in my life now.
I love the way you say it. Not like, oh, so I'm playing that. That's now part of my life.
Yep, well, so. Yeah,
you know, so I'm watching Breaking Bad right now, too, and staying mm-hmm. current on that. And so I often compare meth addictions to Civ Rev and playing Civ Rev. And it's like, well, a day gets sucked away really quickly. Now I stop contacting my friends. I don't go outside.
You start eating a bunch of sweets.
I skip meals.
Yeah.
So
you exclusively drink Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
You mistake Mormons for bikers.
No, I don't know. It's fine.
Well, I mean, technically, a lot of them are bikers, just not motorbikers.
Yeah. Well, what are you playing it on? PS3?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's basically something to tide me. It's only temporary, guys. I swear I can quit whenever I want.
Yeah. Well, you can quit when Grand Theft Auto 5 comes out. I know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then when you beat Grand Theft Auto 5 before Batman Year One comes out, you're going to, you know.
See, I'm not excited about that one. It's not Rocksteady.
I'm glad that Super Rev doesn't have DLC.
I guess not. Yeah, man, we're making this full circle. What are you saying?
No, I don't know what I was going to say. I think I just felt like talking.
I love talking. I love hearing my voice. It took me a few games to ramp back up to Deity level, but I beat it on Americans on Deity. I'm going through Spanish on Deity right now. So I think my goal will be to try and beat it on Deity with as many victories as I can for each culture. Okay. I don't know if I'll make it to like the Mongols or anything, but.
Are you like following the trophies to figure out like what's next, or are you?
No, I'm not doing any trophies. I'm just basically picking a culture and then trying to beat it all four ways with that culture,
okay.
Which basically means get to the end, save it, and then beat it one way, load it, beat it another way, and do that for all four ones.
Okay, yeah. No, so I've never played it on the console. I've only ever played it first on DS and then on iPhone/iPad.
And is it Civ Rev or is it like a legit Civ?
Yeah, okay. It's the same game. It's all the same systems behind it. It's just different graphics.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yep. It is definitely Civ Rev. Man, that's such a good game.
It is.
Yeah.
Anything? Don't ever play it, though.
Not even
save
one.
Yourself, children.
Civ Rev, not even once.
Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine
just
how.
Say
how...
no.
Yeah, how would Ben act in a scared straight program?
You don't even know.
Just scratching everything. Yeah, I don't.
Instead of having spiders crawling all over your skin, you have Gandhis crawling all over you.
Just laughing his horrible nonverbal chant. I don't know.
So we've been going for a good long while. I know we had a multiplayer decked up. However, I need to go to bed, and this is a longer episode. So why don't we table that until next week? And
we can give our viewers a whole week to ask us questions.
Yes, yeah. So it's a free play. Check out the Facebook or go to duckfeed.tv/contact and pick the level. Send us your questions that you would like us to talk about. We just got really diverted, and... you know, hopefully you enjoyed it.
More diverted than usual.
So do we have a quorum? That is okay?
Yeah. A quorum?
Okay.
That's fine.
A quorum.
A quorum.
Yeah.
Oh. Isn't that fake meat stuff?
I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
So do we have a fake meat stuff to say that we're going to table that tonight?
I had delicious. I had steak and sauteed onions tonight. It was delicious. A good dinner, you guys. But that is beside the point. I guess it's all my way of asking. Ben is okay. We button it up.
Please. Am I? Wait, do you direct that question to me every week specifically?
Always.
This entire time?
You haven't figured it out.
I did not know that. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's why the episodes without you never end. we just go until the hard drive fills up.
They just carry over until the next week when I'm there.
Yeah, pretty much. That's why we're so tired and cranky.
Leave the mics on, boys. It's going to be a long week.
Boil me some Mountain Dew. Oh,
as a side note, just to show I'm not entirely crazy. Fake meat.
Never a good way to start a sentence or a thought.
No, but fake meat.
There's a few things that you like when you try and you convince your friends of, it's always just works against you. One of them is like trying to convince your friends that you're not crazy.
Mm, yeah.
Not crazy.
Yeah. No, not. You just sent us a link. I'll put it in the show notes to Quorn, Quorn, which appears to be some kind of petri dish grown meat.
Also a heavy metal tribute band.
New metal, you mean? New metal.
Yeah. That.
Oh, man. Okay. A freak on a leash greedily gobbling down corn. Just
what?
Just like furtively just... Oh, man. So,
what about a leak on a leash?
Are we doing word association now?
No, I think you're thinking of live. okay. Anyway. This has been a weird episode, you guys. I don't even know.
Five minutes long, five minutes of usable material.
No, it's fine. I marketed it. It's going to be a long one. It's going to, hopefully everybody likes it. But if you like it, and if you can tolerate more of this, go to duckfeed.tv/thelevel. There you can find episodes of the show, et cetera, and on down the line. The usual like on Facebook. Let's see here. Rate, subscribe, and review on iTunes. We always appreciate when that happens. That helps us get up in the charts, helps more people find us. And our particular off-brand sense of quirky humor, it's a fractured view on the gaming world.
From fractured minds.
Oh, God, the Gandhis are all over me.
Title.
The actual title is Crapperture.
Yeah, I was going to say, how could it not be Crapperture?
as a minor programming note, because I don't know where else to say it, Those Damn Ross Kids is not going away. We're just on a bit of a hiatus right now as we're sorting some stuff out. It will be coming back shortly. I'm just not sure when. But there are other shows on the network. There's the new show pilot season. I'm on the first two episodes. It's real fun. That's going to be on iTunes here shortly, if not already by now. So go check that out. We would really appreciate it. And then, go ahead.
Can I suggest a image for this episode?
Oh, okay. I maintain final editorial control, but
we are going with Crapperture, I would go with the Aperture Science logo.
Photoshopped on the goats.
Photoshopped to be brown. Oh, God. We're the worst.
Oh, my gosh.
Earlier I said you're the worst, David, but we're the worst. All of us
yeah,
are.
We did it.
As a team, we are worse together.
We did it. Go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar for all of your Amazon purchasing buying needs. That definitely helps us out. It helps us, cover the hosting costs of the show. This, just the network costs a lot of money to run, every month. And that helps defray that and make it so that, we can stay afloat. So
do you want to know a dirty little secret?
Go ahead.
I used that link while we were recording.
Ooh, goodness. Yeah.
Now
you'll be able to get, if you get a list of what has been bought recently, you'll be able to guess which is mine.
Okay. I always feel like I need to disclose. I do see what is bought. I do see it. No names or anything are attached. You people live fascinating lives. I'm serious. Like you have varied interests and hobbies. It's neat. So don't feel weirded out. Don't be self-conscious because plenty of people use it. And I can't pin it down to any single one person. I just feel that in the interest of disclosing, I do have that information. I don't do anything weird with it aside from marvel at it and think you people live awesome lives. Is that fair? Is that creepy?
No, I like that.
Okay.
So it's like a benevolent kind of dictatorship. Yeah,
it's just like, it's, you know, every morning I get up and I, you know, like in between taking a shower and getting my coffee, I sit down and I check the previous day's reports and I see that stuff and I get a little glimpse of somebody else's life besides mine where, you know, other things are purchased besides fancy notebooks and beer. So
not by me.
Wait, can you buy beer on Amazon?
No, I'm just talking in general.
Ah, dang it.
So let's land this plane, you guys. If you're a Twitter sort of folk, my name has been Cole Ross, and you can find me at Cole Ross on Twitter, KOLEROSS.
I'm Dennis Fury. You can find me at D Furia.
I'm David Moneysmith. I'm at MySmith777. I actually tweeted something for once.
Oh, no! Wow. Hey. What?
Let's see here. So, do you mind if we do a ceremonial reading?
Sure.
wait a minute. Dubstep is what happens when you make Tetris angry. Commentary from the NAV Olympics.
Also, the other one, I went to my undergraduate the same place I'm doing my graduate studies. However, the bathrooms next to the library and the engineering labs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They switched the location, which one's men's and which one's women. So I've kind of, you know, proceeded to, just by habit, walk into what has always been the men's room. Hilarity ensues.
That's way too many characters to fit into a tweet, David.
Yeah, I cut it down. I am good tweeter. Ben, David Ham, make concise tweets.
Ben, how about you? What's your tweet?
I am at Merkelizer on Twitter as well.
Okay.
where else can you tweet? Why do we say at Twitter?
Tradition.
Okay, by the time it gets to you guys, the context is there that we're talking about Twitter, right? So you don't need to say on Twitter. You can just say, I am Merkel. I'm Ben Merkel.
I am Merkel. Fear me. I will overtake this planet.
Yes, you can say, I am Merkel, and then kick over a skyscraper.
I know. Just to show you, next week I'm going to start a MySpace account. And
We should ensure to our audience that it is not like 3 a.m. in the morning when we're recording this. It is, I guess it's 11:40 for you guys.
Yeah, it is. It's damn late.
Never mind. What's your excuse, Ben?
Yeah, I have none. 90 minutes.
Oh, man. Well, so that has been The Level. You know, thank you. Have a good week. Be safe. And, you know, stick around for the next 3 months because we're going to be releasing a special piece of DLC. Only $14.99 or 1,200 Microsoft points. Stay tuned. Also, the DLC is going to be the middle portion of this episode. There's going to be a time skip, so we'll fill out the details.
Welcome to The Level, a podcast not actually that much about video games.
Well, all of it was about video games, David. All of it.
A podcast about something. Get the DLC to find out what. Yeah. It like, we cannot possibly have a good conversation about this because we are in the dominant group of every. Yeah.
No, we rule. Like, we're white males. We're like, the world is our oyster. We can walk into anybody's house and take whatever we want.
We need, like, for
and as we know, Dennis in fact does.
There we go. That's post-roll.